Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at Stephanie Dombra, The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. A couple of things struck our attention recently. Stephanie and I were talking and thinking about a whole concept that we always have of revenge. Revenge, funny word, revenge, avenge, retribution. Revenge, the word revenge comes from the French venger, V-E-N-G-E-R, which means to avenge. In The Godfather, a very famous quote, where the Godfather says to one of his sons, "Vengeance is the dish best served cold." Now, what does that mean? That means, you know, don't try to get vengeance when you're passionate because you're not going to do it well. Wait till you cool down. Actually, that quote, believe it or not, came from Aristotle. And as you know, there's a lot of similarity between Aristotle and, well, okay, some similarity. Vengeance. Now, you may not think that you're very involved in vengeance, are you? What is prison? Is prison a form of vengeance? You commit a crime. Now we're going to get even with you for committing the crime. We're going to put you in prison. Is that what vengeance is? Is vengeance, I'm going to sue you for divorce and take away your money? Is that vengeance? Is vengeance, what is vengeance? Well, that's a very good question. Revenge is a harmful action against a person or group as a response to a real or perceived grievance. So if somebody hurt somebody, the somebody who got hurt may say, "I want to get even." But wait a minute. Monkeys don't do that. Dogs don't do that. Cats don't do that. Fish don't do that. "Hey, you ate my babies. I'm coming to get you." In most of nature, you'll see, if a mother loses her child to another animal who eats it, if a tiger grabs a baby gazelle or something, you know, the mother's not stalking, waiting for that tiger. It's kind of gone. It's left. So vengeance seems to be something quite human. And I want to talk about it because a lot of people's heads are filled with vengeance, wanting to get even. Let's look at it. In fact, I was looking at it, and I was looking for articles about it. And Stephanie, you went through the list of books. How many books do we have about vengeance that are available, just in a quick listing?
It's quite a lot, Armand.
Give us a reading.
Okay. We have the Revenge Book, 101 Revenge Tricks. Here's another one, Sweet Revenge, Revenge of the Debutantes, Sharp's Revenge, The Revenge of Wannabes, The Big Book of Revenge, Dirty Tricks, Revenge, A Story of Hope, Screw Unto Others, How to Get Your Revenge Legally, Beyond Revenge, The Revenge Encyclopedia, Getting Even, The Book of Dirty Tricks, High-Tech Harassment, 1,000 Years of Revenge. I wonder if anybody wrote those book lists down and is going to get them now.
No, go get all of those books. Are you mad at somebody? Did somebody hurt you? So we, of course, asked each other, do we have anybody that we would like to, that we feel revenge for? And neither of us could locate it. I've been offended. I've been hurt. There have been times in childhood I was treated very unfairly. Do I want revenge? No, I don't feel that. But many people do. So what's the secret behind it, you know? Is it the level of abuse? Shakespeare writes in his 36 dramatic situations that revenge, for a harm done is one of the great themes of his book. The whole idea of revenge, the whole idea of war, sometimes is all about revenge. I mean, think we've entered wars because of you shot somebody or you had somebody done or you know, the 9/11. You know, it's all revenge. We're not going to let you do that. You got Pearl Harbor, we'll get all of you. You know, we'll Nagasaki you. We'll do whatever we have to do to you. Revenge. Now, I'm not judging the feeling. I just don't really understand it. So I move to understand it. So let's take a look at some of the belief about it. Revenge generally implies an action undertaken by an individual outside the boundaries of judicial or ethical conduct. See, ethical conduct and revenge, that's one thing. Or judicial is revenge. Justice, you could seek revenge. But outside that, the goal of revenge is you want to force the perceived wrongdoer to suffer the same or greater pain than that which was originally inflicted. So let's look at Bernie Madoff. Bernie Madoff with a lot of people's money, right? So a lot of people invested their money, and they got scammed, and they lost fortunes. He's in prison. How many people do you think want revenge on Bernie Madoff? That when he gets out, they're hunting for him. They're looking for him. You know, if he goes to prison and he gets out, they're coming after him. How many people in prison do you think want to get even with him because they lost money? Not many. See, the idea of Bernie Madoff was he was going to make you money more than you were entitled to. See, the same thing with all Ponzi schemes. All Ponzi schemes are you trying to get something that you're not really entitled to. So now you invest your money by greed, and then it kicks back on you and you lose something. Do you need revenge against the person who stole from you? Not very often. Usually those people take their beating and say, I should have known better. Revenge seems to be something else. It seems to be important for something else. When it violates you in such a way that you feel all you can do is get even. And you wait and you wait and you wait to get even somehow. The Old Testament talks about an eye for an eye. Validates the concept of proportionate revenge, equality of suffering, which has this kind of simple fallacy. Two wrongs make a right. You wrong me, if I wrong you back, then there's a balance. Well, it's not necessarily true. Research is called revenge, the psychology of retribution, but there's a paradox. Because when they've done research on this, when we take out our revenge on another person, we often feel worse afterward, and we thought we would feel better. One of the most interesting bits is that it covers a study finding that while we think revenge makes us feel better after an injustice, it seems to have the opposite effect of making us more unhappy. In the feeling survey, the punishers reported feeling worse than the non-punishers, but predicted they would have felt even worse had they been not given the opportunity to punish. The non-punishers said they thought they would feel better if they'd had the opportunity for revenge, even though the survey identified them as the happier group. So if in a group of people who were all victimized, the punishers who actually got even felt worse, but the non-punishers, the ones who didn't seek revenge, felt better. What a strange thing. Despite conventional wisdom, the reason revenge may stoke anger's flame may lie in the fact of ruminations. We tend to ruminate. We tend to think about it over and over and over again. We can't let it go. And usually, I believe, the revenge comes from the fact that we are sitting with a denial of our own culpability. What part did we play in this drama? And we just can't get over the fact that we were a participant. It doesn't mean that people are treated unjustly. It doesn't mean that people are not harmed and brutalized and hurt by people with criminal behaviors. It doesn't mean that people should not be punished for what they do to people, especially powerless people. But who obsesses about it? Who keeps it in your mind? What about revenge in you? Now, today we're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. Where does revenge sit in your mind? How far do you keep it in there? You're married. You have a husband. You find out your husband goes off with your best friend. You hate your best friend. You thought she was your best friend. You want revenge. You want to get even. You can't wait till you destroy her in some way. If something bad happens to her, you'd be happy. If you can make something happen, you'd be happy. What is that about? Your parents hurt you when you were a kid. They hurt you over and over again. You're now 40 years later. You wish you could get even with them, but it's 40 years later. They teach you forgiveness. They say, oh, you got to learn to forgive and go beyond it, and you can't. What stops you? Telephone number 212-209-2900. We will be taking your calls about this. Punishing others. You're willing to sacrifice your well-being in order to punish someone who misbehaved. And to get people to punish, they have to be fooled into it. That's part of the way that people sometimes do it. You know, it's called a signifying monkey. Sometimes you set up things between people so that one person wants to get even with somebody else as a result of something you told them. Like you made gossip. You know what they said about you? And they set up an anger between you and someone else so that you have a revenge fantasy about someone who really didn't do anything, but somebody else is in the middle playing you against it. Women, I think, are more likely to be vulnerable in different ways than men are. Because let's think about this. When a man thinks about, well, Stephanie, help me out with this. When a man thinks about vengeance, what does he think about doing? Hurting?
Well, destroying property, hurting the other person.
Ready.
Yeah.
Destroying property.
And if you ask me hormonally, they're going to get very angry and they're going to have all that testosterone and they're going into battle. So I would think that that's more of the custom. They don't really ruminate. They take action. A woman, on the other hand, is thinking about their whole sense of self-worth, self-esteem, how they feel about themselves, the fact that somebody wronged them, that they were scorned. They have to somehow get even. But they don't normally do it with physical kind of destruction. They want to get back at the person's ego or their sense of self, too.
Now, you know, women have something against them because a woman's emotionality is often used against her. So when a woman feels that she's been harmed, if she has an emotional response, it's often perceived that the woman is just being emotional.
And that's really not fair because, of course, they're going to look like they're out of control, but really that there are theories and people who have written that if a woman can calculate and get themselves a plan, they can actually get, you know, the vengeance done if they've been wronged. They could actually do something that would help them to move on.
A dish best served cold.
In a way,
not to have just the reaction.
Yeah.
Well, do you need to find vengeance to move on? That's a very interesting thing. You know, you've been abused. And let's say you were really badly abused as a child. Do you need to have vengeance to move on? How do you move on without it? Do you have post-traumatic stress? Do you deny what do you do? That's a real question. Maybe vengeance seems like the only thing. If only I could hurt that other person. But then we find out that hurting the other person doesn't help. Because it still leaves you in the same pain. You thought it would help, but it doesn't help. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Maria calling from New Jersey.
Hi there.
Hi. I am a little different because I don't feel like I ever have feelings of vengeance or feeling the need to get back at anyone when they've wronged me. So I don't know where that comes from.
Have you been wronged?
I'm sure, certainly. But I may be bitter and, you know, feel sad about things, but I don't try to hurt anyone else, you know, as a result of that.
Do you know anybody who has?
Yes.
Has anybody ever targeted you for revenge?
Yeah, I'm not, I think so, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think so.
What was that about?
Well, it happened when I was in my childhood, my, you know, younger days as teenagers, you know, girls would get into their petty things with boys, and night girls who would try to get back at me if I was dating someone they wanted to date, or, you know, in those kind of situations that would happen. Sometimes even in school, I think, in college, and I'm talking about a higher level in terms of school, there may be situations where, I think there were situations anyway, and I could have perceived them just wrongly, but where people may have done things to get back at me for different reasons, whether it was just because they wanted something I had, or, you know, things didn't work out in their favor, but it worked out in mine, whether it was in a competitive situation or not.
And Maria, it must be confusing to you to have people getting even for you for something you don't even understand.
Yeah, because I'm not competitive, you know, and spirited in a sense. So, and maybe that's why I also am not much of a revenge sort of person either.
Well, thank you for calling in, Maria.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Stephanie brings up the idea about bullying, internet bullying. You know, where people are there to hurt other people, you know, teenagers, use the internet to hurt other people, and they do it by spreading rumors, publishing pictures, humiliating, and the suicides we've seen from the effectiveness of the vengeance put across.
Yeah, it's like some kind of a phenomenon that every time I go to a school function or something, the principal has to do this reminder, almost like turn off your cell phones and please be aware of internet bullying and what's going on. That seems to be the theme at school these days. And I've seen things come across my emails over the years that show of these incidents where a vulnerable child is susceptible, and they seem to just get constant comments on their Facebook or whatever that these kids are tormenting them. So it's quite a situation out there that's even more pervasive, probably.
You know, there are vendettas. Vendettas or blood feuds are cycles of provocation and retaliation fueled by a burning desire for revenge and carried out over a long period of time by familial or tribal groups. Now, how many times in your family, you know, the Hatfields and the McCoys, how many times has your family said, we'll get even with them one day, or they're the bad guys? And you set up this kind of thing that could be called a vendetta, which is like if you happen to see one of them walking down the street, that's it, they're your enemy. They're an important part of many of the pre-industrial societies, especially in the Mediterranean region, and they still persist in some areas. There are parts of Bosnia where this takes place, where it's like it's family against family, or my family hates your family, or my religion hates your religion. You know, in the Muslim religion, in just here in America. During the Middle Ages, most would not regard an insult or injury as settled until it was avenged. So there's a thing called Wehrgeld, which is Anglo-Saxon, which means man price, which placed a certain monetary value upon certain acts of violence in an attempt to limit the spiral of revenge. So what they would do in Wehrgild was whenever there was an offense, they would, by some person in the middle, ascribe a monetary punishment. Now look at what we were doing. We were developing a court system, because this is what the courts are. So, you know, you insult to somebody's character, you've got to pay a certain amount of money. And he said, because they didn't want to get the thing about you get even, and then they get even, and then you get even, and then they get even. Because that's what happens. That's the spiral of revenge. 212-209-2900. We're going to take another one of your calls. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. My name's Jane.
Hello,
I'm
Jane.
How are you? I'm calling from Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh, good.
I'm 55 years old plus, and when I was a child, I was molested by an older brother. And as an adult, I came to understand exactly what had happened. And in my studies, and you know, I read every book on the subject I could find, I found a quote. And the quote was, "The best revenge is a life well lived." And that's kind of how I've tried to proceed with my own life and my own healing.
Well, let me ask you something, Jane. How old was your brother at the time, and how old were you?
He's 4 years older than me, so the best I can remember is that I was probably about 4 or 5, which would have made him about 8 or 9. And it seemed that every time he learned something, he wanted to try it out on me.
Okay. So that's a pretty disturbed young guy, your brother.
Is it pretty what?
Disturbed young guy to be taking out things that he learned on his younger sister.
Exactly.
He's pretty screwed up.
Yeah.
At that early age.
Yeah. He had some, he was a premature baby with hyaline membrane syndrome, so he had some emotional difficulties and learning disabilities.
Okay, so now here you are, a poor child victim of this, of these abuses. I'm sure some of them were even sexual.
Oh, yes.
Right? And you're saying, I can't stand him. I want to get even with him.
Right.
But you also see his sickness at age 9.
Right.
So what could you possibly do? Do you have any relationship at all with him now?
Well, I basically walled him off from my life, and he lives about 3 hours away. But I wrote him a confrontation letter a number of years ago, and 3 years after that, we happened to be at the same place at the same time at our other brother's funeral. And he asked, very humbly came to me and asked if he could speak to me, and he apologized. He said he had never intended to hurt me.
How did that feel?
It was very interesting because I was like, well, now what do I do with this? So
what do I do now with the anger that I'm carrying if he's
exactly
admitting to it and apologizing?
Right. So we never had a close relationship anyway, for obvious reasons. And so I've always said, you know, God bless and keep the czar far away from us. You know, I've never wanted him any harm to come to him. I just needed him to be away from me. And we've kind of continued that. I mean, I've never wished him harm. I certainly don't wish him harm now. But we just don't have a relationship particularly.
You know, there's a funny thing, Jane, about all of us with parents who have been harmful to us. We were harmed when we were little, 5, 6, 10, 15. We were hurt by parents who were stupid, selfish, harmful, mean, whatever they were. But if they're around 40 years later, things have passed. And now you look at it and you say, well, I would love to get even with them for what happened back then, but they're no longer the same person. At what point do you say, that was then, this is now? And I'm not saying it's what people have to do, because I think
right,
that's why people use therapy. I think what
right,
therapy does is it settles then, so that you can live in the now.
Exactly.
I thank you very much for calling in, Jane.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. You know, the Japanese, in their feudal past, the samurai warrior, you remember that? His whole purpose in life was to uphold the honor of the Lord through revenge killings. That's what the samurai did. The samurai did justified shibumis. He did, you know, this is the killing only the bad guys. So a samurai warrior. And this tradition continued. These killings could also involve the relatives of an offender. Today, it's called karakiuchi. It's most often pursued by peaceful means, but revenge remains a very important part of a Japanese culture. And if you think about that, you know, I'm going to get you one day. One day I'm going to get you one way or another. It's a part of a culture. In fact, in Scotland, there's a motto, which none shall provoke or injure me with impunity. The origin of the motto, it talks about the clan system of Scotland in the Highlands, where you say, you just cannot hurt me and with impunity. You're going to have to pay for it. The goal of some limited legal systems is limited to just revenge. In Dante's Inferno, some have attempted to turn the crime against the criminal in gruesome ways. But most of all, it happens to us. And what happens to us when we think about revenge? What happens to us when we live on revenge? What is that feeling about, my friends? Well, there's a lot more we have to say about it. And this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Listen, I need a favor from all of you. Here's a favor. We need to get some recent feedback on our radio programs, The Positive Mind. Now, we know that this program is now streaming across the nation, across the globe, actually. And I need to receive back some recent feedback on what you feel about the programs. Do you like the programs? What do you like about them? What don't you like about them? How can we better serve you? Do you miss the music? Does the music have meaning to you? The music, we used to play long music interludes, now we're playing less because of changes in our system. Do you like the guests? Would you prefer guests, co-hosts? Would you like to have the callers, not the callers? What means something to you? There's a privilege of having so many hours with you each week, but we want to keep serving you. So I ask you, please send me an email. An email to armand@thepositivemind.com and make the email, just say to me, it's okay to show this to people, because I would like to put it together and show it to the people in charge. They'll see everything, the good and the bad. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will continue with this program about revenge. Hi, this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about revenge. I always thought Beethoven's Fifth was about revenge. In fact, sometimes you want to drink a Beethoven's Fifth. The first appearance of the proverb, a dish best served cold, was Aristotle. It goes all the way back. Revenge is more satisfying as a considered response enacted when unexpected or long feared, inverting the more traditional revulsion towards cold-blooded violence. You know, cold-blooded violence is just too passe. 212-209-2900. Are you eaten up on the inside by a need to get revenge? Did somebody hurt you in such a way that you just can't live without it? That you've got to find your way? 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I was going to say, okay, I chant. So I look at things through by way of cause and effect, you know, Nam-myoho-renge-kyo, which you're familiar with.
Sure.
Now, revenge is something that I, you know, comes up on me often from the point of view that...
Could you turn down your radio?
Turn that radio down.
Turn that radio off.
I'm sorry.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I thought you were chanting twice.
Yeah, you know, the idea of wanting to get even with somebody, because I felt, you know, the idea of me wanting to get even or wanting to see some, you know, a resurrection of myself that I feel has been put down through some stupid act on my part where I walked away feeling less than. So, you know, for me, it's mired in a sense of deep insecurity and diminishment of power, a sense of being, sense of that I've been, you know, put down. And that'll, if I keep continuously to review that or to indulge it in my mind's eye, I'm just continuously reminding myself of my diminishment.
Wow.
And once I feel well, either by way of a good night's sleep, I wake up the next morning better, I'm doing my practice and actually see myself vibrant and well, all sense of anger and vengefulness leaves. In other words, like, what's really important is that I feel well. So it's really never the other party's fault.
Well, you know, of course, I mean,
it's hard to explain what
it,
you know,
isn't
in words.
In your life, of course, but it is in some people's life. Some people have been abused so badly and unjustly. But it is always somebody, it could easily be somebody else's fault. You know, if you think about rape, murder, you think about some of the criminal things that happen, there is somebody at fault, but you've learned something about yourself.
I can, Mr.
You've learned about your own
reality of cause and effect, not the old ringy cure.
Yeah, and you've also learned about powerlessness.
Oh, that's my main reason for practicing.
That's right. Exactly. So describe that. Describe why powerlessness is your main reason.
Powerlessness, well, you know, some people can walk into a crowd and not, you know, not flinch. Other people immediately walk in, assessing the situation, speaking for myself, wanting to be part of the situation, and then sometimes I'm thinking about it, I'm 70, you know, realizing that I don't really have too much to say about it. So many times I may walk into situations where I walk away feeling unfulfilled, if I could use that word.
Yeah.
And anger is building without, speaking for myself, often not even realizing it. And that sense of anger, you know, when you start rehashing it in your mind, it doesn't come across like anger. It's like you just want to get, you want to show, you don't want to feel that you was the odd man out, or that you, or that I was the you know, that I didn't come off. I don't know exactly how to explain it. And one, like when one is alienated, you know, simply because of all differing reasons, you know, socially, I mean, one doesn't have the, you know, one doesn't feel that one fits in. Anger will naturally start to well that we
anger
don't even realize.
So simple. Anger is a simple.
It's a natural occurrence that you may not even realize, because we live in a society where you're not supposed to have that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but you've learned to take that anger and quell it. Because you know it's a mask.
Most definitely, it is a symptom of a deeper condition, which
thank
is
you
my
very
own
much.
Sense of non-self. Even though in Buddhism says there is no self.
Got you. What's your name?
I've spoken to you a couple of times. My name is Ronald Toro.
Hey, Ronald Toro. Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, I'm sorry. I keep saying boom, 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 one thing after another, and
you're,
it may
you
sound
do
like
fine.
This, disassociated.
You
well, anyway,
fine.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. As far as the program goes, I love it. Music too long. I'd rather hear you.
Send me an email.
Send me
an email. I got to collect them. Okay, you need to get 100 emails to be able to put together and examine. Okay. One day, a farmer's donkey fell down into a well. The animal cried out for help, help, help. The farmer, he said, "I can't get this donkey out of here. So I don't know what I'm going to do." So the donkey fell quiet. And the farmer, figuring the donkey was dead, he said to his friends, "Let's just fill the well. We can't use the well anymore. Let's pour sand in it." So he got some friends around, and they took some earth, and they started to fill the well. But what happened is the donkey was quiet. But every time they threw in some soil, the donkey climbed up a step. He said, "I'll just stand on top of the soil." And then they threw in more soil. And the donkey stand up another step. And then they threw in more soil, and they finally saw the donkey what he was doing. The donkey was stepping on the dirt that was being thrown on him. Until finally, he got to the top. And to everyone's amazement, he took a step up. He shook it off and trotted off. So that's the story, my friends. Life is going to shovel dirt on you. All kinds of dirt. The trick is to build yourself on that dirt. Shake it off. Take a step up. Each of us and our troubles is a stepping stone. We can get out of the deepest wells, not just by stopping, never giving up, but we take a step up. Remember the five simple rules to be happy. Free your heart from hatred. Forgive wherever you can. Free your mind from worries. Because most worries that we have, 95% of them never happen. Live in simplicity and appreciate what you have around you. Give more, expect less. Now, enough of that. The donkey came back, by the way, and he saw the farmer, and he nudged the farmer. And the farmer was kind of shocked. Because what he didn't get to understand is that you maybe sometimes you give up much sooner than you should. And especially when somebody needs your help. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. We're talking about vengeance. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Sherry in Manhattan.
Hello, Sherry in Manhattan.
Hi. I've been listening to what you've been saying, and there are two thoughts
I wanted
to share.
Yours is a new voice. You've never called in before.
Maybe once, a long time ago. I'm not a regular caller.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So one of the things that I thought was that I was curious about the difference between punishment and vengeance. You talked about prison and some other examples, and I thought, well, some things are punishment. This is the consequence of one's actions. A kid acts up, they get sent to the room. Somebody breaks some kind of a law, they get sent to jail. The death penalty, however, may be more of an act of vengeance. And I was kind of thinking, well, what is the difference between punishment and vengeance? And I came up with this idea that punishment, somewhere in it might lie the desire or the notion of teaching, action, consequence, whereas vengeance comes along with wrath, a rage that is out of control.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thought. You know, I'll hang up and you can
don't hang up. I got to ask you a question.
I have one other idea that I wanted to share with
you.
Wait.
Vengeance sometimes is premeditated. Sometimes it's not just with wrath.
But I think even in its premeditation, it comes with rage.
Let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
In your past,
mm-hmm.
you were violated. You had
I
to
was?
Make, yes.
Okay.
You had to make the choice. When were you offended in such a way that you had to make a choice?
Wow. I think there's a difference between being violated and being offended.
Okay, let's say offended.
So I think I'm offended many times. You know, typical BAI listener. I'm offended by the nonsense that we get fed as coverage on the Gulf oil gushing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm offended by that. I'm offended by
the way our laws.
Right, the way we don't respond.
The way you're stopped from responding.
And we don't hold the people who are in charge accountable. But mm-hmm. then, you know, if you park on the wrong side of the street, you know, your car is going to be towed or something. It's offensive to me that our environment can be destroyed and those people in power are rarely, if ever, held accountable.
Okay, so now how would you like to hold the people in power accountable?
For their misdeeds, sure. And I don't think that's vengeance. I think that might be more of a punishment thing.
Do you want the punishment or do you want it to stop? That's the real question. Do you want to punish them or do you want to stop them?
I want it to stop.
Me too.
I wanted to stop, but I think also, I mean, if we're using that Gulf gushing of oil as an example, there has to be some remedy that shows other companies what will happen to them if they decide to do the same thing, if they decide not to have the safety measures and all of that, you know, to say, well, okay, if BP did this, this is what happened to BP. So if you decide to do this, know that this will happen to you also.
Yeah.
So that's where I think it becomes a teaching and less of a vengeance issue.
I had a
dream. If that makes sense.
I had a dream the other morning that someone interviewed me because I was being interviewed for some radio, some newspaper article. And they asked me, they said, could you make one wish? And I said, I wish that no one who is from this country kills anybody else in another country ever again. I wish there would not one more death that would happen at our hands, at the hands of the people from the country I'm from. I wish it would just stop. I wish there were a way that it could just, that I could arrest every hand, every gun, every bullet, every bomb. I wish I could stop the damage. You ever feel that way?
Do I ever feel that way? If I could stop, I would like the damage to stop, but not just this country to anywhere else, but for all of humanity, that we can evolve into some. I think compassion is the thing. People talk about love, but that's a concept that gets very, I think, confused. But I think compassion is the thing that, as a human species, if we can evolve to the next level and have greater compassion for our own life and for life on this planet,
so how does compassion,
we will stop doing that.
How does compassion fit with punishment?
I think that it does fit, because I think it doesn't fit with vengeance, but I think it may fit with punishment, because it's that example that is set. Okay, BP, we will do this to your profits. Therefore, you know, the next company, I don't know, Exxon, will take note of that and then not have the same action repeated, hopefully.
Well,
so that's the idea, to hold someone or some entity accountable for their actions, as opposed to wanting this kind of rageful act against them to rip them to shreds or what have you. That would be more vengeance, and I think that would not teach anything.
Good thinking. Thank you so
Wait,
much.
I have one more idea I want to
share
with you.
Sure, please.
You had made an analogy about taking sort of holding on to this idea of vengeance and maybe wrestling with one's culpability in the action.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered about that. I wonder if it's always that we have this sense of our own culpability, because there are times when, okay, if a woman is raped, she may be in a place of a lot of rage and wanting vengeance, but may not necessarily be culpable in that rape. At least I don't see it that way, that a woman who's raped is it's her fault. I see that as kind of blaming the victim.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering about that, and I wondered if it was less about facing one's culpability and perhaps maybe more about healing, because under whatever that desire is for vengeance, there is a deep hurt. And if that deep hurt can be healed, then we can release this notion of vengeance.
Well, let's not take an extreme like rape or murder or something like that, but let's take another example of it. You're absolutely right. People who get cheated by other people, usually,
Bernie Madoff?
Like the Bernie Madoff thing, usually are people, the people who get cheated the most, are usually people who have some kind of larceny in their own minds. You know, like, in other words, they're going to get rich quick, they're going to do things, right? So the culpability, in some way, they hate to face, boy, did I really screw this one up.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they want instead is revenge.
I think that in part that's true. Let's using that Bernie Madoff example, people who think that, okay, well, I'm just going to get all this money and I don't care how it's done and, you know, just take care of me. That may be true. They have to face their own greed and their own foolishness. But I also think that when in that Bernie Madoff case, when you have lost everything and you have to face your own greed and your own foolishness, there is also a deep pain. There's a deep pain about your own foolishness, about the condition that you put perhaps yourself, not only yourself, but your family in. If you're a family person, you have children, and now you've lost all of your savings, there is a deep pain and a,
right.
a hurt there that we have to get to. If we can heal that and accept our culpability and then heal from it, then we can let go of the vengeance.
I appreciate
let go of that extreme.
I appreciate your calling. Thank you very
much. I appreciate your program.
Please send me a letter about that, would you?
Will do.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Including if you don't like the program, send me a letter. But then why would you be listening? You know, often a person more experienced in the kinds of matters tells us that revenge is not to be doing. When people misbehave, it's not out of strength. Further, just as walls do not a prison make, no matter what someone does to us, we don't have to feel belittled by it. Whatever we do is a matter of choice. Whatever we feel, whatever choose to feel, we could choose to be victimized. We could choose to feel sorry for the other person. We could choose to be angry. There are several reasons, but if you don't believe in karma, you know, it's a choice. If you do wrong because somebody did wrong, then they're going to do wrong to you as well. And it perpetuates it. And somewhere in there, we get a little evolved. Living well to live well, not to show him we aren't down for long. Understand that whoever victimizes us wins as long as they occupy our thoughts. So what we have to do somewhere in here, my friends, is to rise beyond it. Yes, you may have to do something to stop a violation that I agree with, but not just to get even. Not just to make it even. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there, you're on the air.
Armand, it's a very interesting polemic that you put out there.
Thank you.
You know, as a person who is a Christian, who's trying to understand and do the right thing, I hear that. But I've also listened to James Brown sing The Big Payback.
That's right.
Don't want me to see what you're doing to me. You and your friends had it all arranged, sold me out for chicken change. Now, it's interesting because on one part, I can understand some of that. When I say some of that, meaning that I have been the victim. I've worked for the city for over 20 years, was a supervisor for over 20 years, and I lost my job because I was doing my job. And what I'm trying to grapple with is how people can be in a responsible position of having to take care of senior citizens in the main, not doing it, fabricating visits, and then when you call them on it, they turn around and victimize you by accusing you of doing something that you didn't do. And, you know, how do you grapple with that?
I've dealt with that a number of times in my life. And there's a very funny thing about it, and it's the advantage of living a long time. How old are you now?
59.
You got time. You got lots of time. You're just a young man. one of the things that happen, and you know it, is that everybody who is unfair gets burned. And I have never seen an unfair person last. I just haven't seen them last. I have watched the people who are really creeps in society, who are unfair, who do unjust things, and I watch them in their lives. And I see either in their personal lives or their professional lives, they burn themselves out. So what's happened to me over time is even though I see the injustice and I've had injustices brought against me, I know somewhere you're going to eat your heart out with this one, buddy. You know? So, I mean, I'm not passive. I'll stand against injustice. But I also know that anybody who is unjust is poisoned. And so I see that. So over time, I see it and I say to myself, oh, poor fella who has to take this route. I remember somebody who once said to me when I was a young man, he said, I pity the man who has to stand on the bodies of other men so that he could seem taller. It stuck in my brain.
I understand that. But at the same time, you still have to pay your mortgage.
That's right.
I got a kid just getting ready to go to college.
That's right.
And, you know, just your self-esteem, everything that is part of your work and, you know, trying to protect people as well as protect the city against litigious situations because a person is not doing what they're doing.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So you do that, and, you know, it's unbelievable, the turn of events.
So how do you get by? Do you get by getting angry, or do you get by saying, whew, this is tough?
It depends on what day it is.
Okay, now that's a very important thing. Because it does depend on what day it is. Meaning at certain days you're more vulnerable and likely to be focused on being a victim than other days.
When the bills come due,
uh-huh.
I'm a victim. I haven't paid my mortgage in 3 years.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
And you haven't paid your mortgage. And the fact that you haven't paid your mortgage in 3 years makes somebody else a victim. Makes somebody
yeah.
else your victim.
Yeah. And it's not so much my victim. And you said something just now. One of the persons that lied on me got fired.
Right.
They got fired for the same thing that I wrote them up for.
Sure.
But it doesn't help me because I'm still fired. And I'm looking for opportunity. In fact, I just talked to my union president right before I talked to you about the next step that we're going to take to make me whole. So we're going to talk again tomorrow. But it's deep because I see the persons that were involved as being insecure, scared, and trying to keep their job at all costs. I see that. I understand that. But at the same time, you know, you never want to be the victim of that.
Well, I want to thank you for calling in, and thank you for sharing your thoughts. We're going to have to be going. Thank you so much.
All right, Armand.
Okay, my friend. Well, this is Armand DeMille. Remember, send me some letters, would you? I want to know what you think. I want an evaluation of the Positive Mind radio program, what you would like of it. How would you like things to change? Do it to the other programs as well, because everybody's listening. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. I think we're going to be talking about food. Armand at thepositivemind.com.